Dr. William Luther Pierce, the year 2000. Rubes and Carnies.
Hello. In our last two broadcasts, we talked about the Jewish trade in white slaves and about why the Jews engage in such activity. Today we'll expand that discussion to some related subjects. First, however, let me tell you that after last week's broadcast, just as after the broadcast of the previous week, a number of listeners wrote to me that I am wrong about the Jews, that they really are not the evil and destructive creatures I have made them out to be. They are clever and sensitive and creative and have made many important contributions to our society. They reminded me of Jesus and Freud and Einstein and suggested that our civilization is based on the contributions of these three Jews. I don't know why they forgot to mention Karl Marx. A few years ago, when communism was still fashionable, the apologists for the Jews used to list Jesus, Marx, Freud, and Einstein as examples of great contributors to Western civilization. And then they would slyly mention that all four just happened to be Jews. I'll come back to this matter of Marx, Freud, and so on a little later in our broadcast today. At the moment, I'll just mention that the reason I bring these names up is that some people tell me that these are the men we should think of when we think of Jews, not the Jewish slave dealers. The slave trade is an anomaly, they tell me, and it is not at all representative of Jews and their activities. Well, well, well. I have on my desk at the moment a news item from Brazil. It is dated July 5th. That's just 10 days ago. And it was reported by Reuters news agency. It is about a child prostitution ring operated in Brazil by Israeli diplomats in order to satisfy the sexual appetites of Israeli tourists. I'll bet you haven't seen anything about this on whichever network television news program you watch. The head of the child prostitution ring is Ari Scher, Israel's consul in Rio de Janeiro. The ring recruited girls as young as 9 years old and organized sex parties with the children for Israeli tourists. One of the child prostitutes was questioned by Brazilian police and led them to the home of a Hebrew language teacher in Rio, Jorge Steinberg, where police seized photographs of hundreds of naked children and videos taken at sex parties with the children. Viewing the videos, police officials recognized the swimming pool and deck of the Israeli consul, Ari Scher, which was the scene of many of the sex parties. I'll quote directly from the Reuters news report. Police said a young girl testified she was filmed and photographed by the teacher, Jorge Steinberg, having sex with Israeli tourists. She also explained that Scher participated in some of the sessions. We confirmed that the pornographic pictures were taken next to the consul's pool and on his deck, said Roberto Costa, a chief investigator for the civil police, end quote. Ari Scher, of course, was immediately whisked out of Brazil by the Israeli government before the Brazilian police could question him. Now, why is this story significant? After all, among every nationality there are perverts and degenerates and child molesters. Yes, but not every government is involved in child prostitution. Are we supposed to believe that the foreign ministry back in Jerusalem didn't know that one of their diplomats was using the consular residence in Rio de Janeiro to entertain big-shot Israeli tourists with sex parties featuring children? Are we supposed to believe that Israel's super-efficient intelligence apparatus wasn't aware of what Jewish tourists were doing at the consular residence? And doesn't this sort of thing fit right in with the Israeli government's toleration of forced prostitution and white slavery? I'll read you something else. This is a much older report about white slavery. It was written in 1925 in Germany. I quote, "The relation of Jews to prostitution, and even more to the white slave traffic, could be studied in Vienna as perhaps in no other city of Western Europe, with the possible exception of the southern French ports. If you walked at night through the streets and alleys of Leopoldstadt, the Jewish district of Vienna, at every step you witnessed proceedings which remained concealed from the majority of the German people until the war gave the soldiers on the Eastern Front occasion to see similar things, or rather forced them to see them. When thus, for the first time, I recognized the Jew as the cold-hearted, shameless, and calculating director of this revolting vice traffic in the scum of the big city, a cold shudder ran down my back." End quote. Those words I just read are from Chapter 2, Volume 1 of Mein Kampf. The author is Adolf Hitler, describing his horror at what he saw as a young man in Vienna just before the First World War. Now I'll read you a more recent comment on the white slave trade. I quote, "In Russia, for example, traffickers prey on orphanages. In a typical scenario, a trafficker will pay an orphanage director approximately $12,000 to take a group of children on a field trip to the local McDonald's, for example. Groups of children will then leave the orphanage with the trafficker and never be seen or heard from again." End quote. Those were the words of New Jersey's Congressman Christopher Smith introducing a bill into the House of Representatives just a few weeks ago. The bill, designated H.R. 3244, is the Trafficking Victims Protection Act of 2000. Congressman Smith, of course, did not dare to identify the slave traders who abduct young Russian girls from orphanages and force them to become sex slaves. But I'll tell you who they are. They are members of the Organizatia, the Jewish Organized Crime Syndicate, misleadingly referred to by the media in this country as the Russian Mafia. It seems that the passage of 90 years and a so-called Holocaust have not persuaded the Jews to change their ways. Jews don't operate in a vacuum, of course. In Russia and Ukraine, for example, where the Jews currently obtain most of the girls and young women they enslave for the sex trade, they depend upon a corrupt government. The Jewish slave trader who abducts young girls from an orphanage in Moscow or St. Petersburg, as related by Congressman Smith, depends upon a corrupt official in charge of the orphanage who will accept a bribe to let the Jew take the girls on the field trip from which they never return. In Russia, the official corruption permeates every level of government. The Jews had nearly 75 years to arrange that, to stamp out the old aristocratic way of doing things and replace it with their way. I had hopes that when Boris Yeltsin lapsed into his final vodka stupor, a Russian patriot might take his place and begin a general house cleaning in Russia. It's becoming increasingly obvious, however, that Vladimir Putin is no patriot. He is simply another Russian front man, somewhat better disciplined than Yeltsin and less dependent on vodka, but he receives his orders from the same people behind the scenes. There was a big revelation in this regard just a few weeks ago when the political police in Spain leaked the news that Putin had been slipping secretly into the country for visits to a luxurious villa on Spain's south coast near Cadiz. The villa is owned by Boris Abramovich Berezovsky, the Jewish billionaire media tycoon and racketeer who was the power behind Boris Yeltsin and appears now to be the power behind Putin. Other villas around the Berezovsky villa in Spain, which Putin visited, are owned by leading gangsters in the Organizacia, and the Spanish police observed conferences between Putin and these Jewish gangsters, which explains why Putin has made absolutely no move against the organized crime which is plaguing Russia. Putin did arrest one leading Jewish gangster last month and charged him with stealing money from the government. That was Vladimir Gusinsky, who is one of Berezovsky's Jewish rivals for the control of Russia's mass media. The power struggles in Russia these days are between various groups of Jews, with the real Russians having virtually no say in what goes on. Gusinsky was locked up for only 4 days, just long enough for the Jewish media in the West to begin squawking about anti-Semitism in Russia and hinting that the Putin government was beginning a persecution of the Jews there. And, of course, Bill Clinton and half of the members of the U.S. Congress expressed their concern over the Gusinsky arrest. It was the same when the Iranian government cracked a Jewish espionage ring in Iran recently and arrested a group of Jewish spies. If Putin had arrested a real Russian, or if the Iranian government had arrested a dozen French or Polish or German spies, the media over here wouldn't have been interested, and there would have been no expression of concern by Clinton and the other politicians. Here's another related matter. That's the huge influx of Jews from the former Soviet Union into the United States. As the communist system that the Jews had built up in the Soviet Union began to come apart in the 1980s, primarily as a consequence of a disastrously inefficient economy, an economy which was supporting a huge load of parasites, with the Jews foremost among them, Soviet Jews began looking for another host, like fleas on a dying dog looking for a healthier dog to jump to. Some of them went to Israel, but the United States was their host of choice. In order to get around the very tight limitations on immigrants from Europe, the Jews over here began wailing about anti-Semitism in the Soviet Union and how their Soviet Jewish brethren were being persecuted. That, of course, was pure baloney. It's true enough that the real Russians hate the Jews passionately and for very good reason. But the only people over there who have been persecuted since the Reds took over are the Russians, not the Jews. But the wailing was a good enough smokescreen for Jews and their allies in the U.S. Congress to slip through a special immigration quota for victims of persecution in the Soviet Union, the so-called Lautenberg Amendment. For all practical purposes, it applies only to Jews. Any Jew living in Russia can claim victim status, and when he arrives in the United States, is automatically entitled to all sorts of benefits at the expense of American taxpayers. Most Americans are blissfully unaware of this racket. Not only do we now have several hundred thousand Soviet Jews in the United States who have never worked a day in this country, receiving a government check each month and living in subsidized housing, but we have given the Organizacja a foothold here which we will come to regret dearly. Certainly, most Jews who come here from the Soviet Union aren't gangsters, but about 10% of them are, according to the estimates of police officials who must try to cope with them. If they weren't Jews, they wouldn't have been admitted to the country. Their criminal records and their mob affiliations alone would have kept them out. But they're here now because of the unique status the Jews have arranged for themselves here as everywhere else. The FBI and many other police agencies in America recognize the threat posed by the Organizacja, or Russian Mafia, as the media insist on calling it in order to keep the public from realizing its Jewish nature. In money laundering, drugs, gambling, the slave trade, child prostitution, illegal weapons dealing, organized car theft, insurance fraud, securities fraud, you name it. Organized Jewish gangsters from the former Soviet Union are rapidly dominating organized crime activities in the United States. And yet, very little is being done to stop them. For one thing, they all carry Israeli passports. And when one of them is in danger of arrest, he simply catches the next plane to Tel Aviv, where he is safe from extradition. There are other factors involved, however, which make the Organizzazione infinitely more dangerous than the Italian Mafia ever was. Police agencies, including the FBI, are very hesitant to crack down on these Jewish gangsters because they are Jews. And the first thing a Jewish gangster does when he is arrested is proclaim his innocence and accuse the cops who arrested him of being anti-Semitic and using Nazi tactics. Police agencies everywhere have been sensitized to these words. They duck, run, and take cover whenever they hear them. A much more substantial shield for the Organizzazione is corruption. The Italian Mafia, of course, used to bribe cops on the beat, police officials, judges, prosecutors, mayors, governors, and other politicians in order to stay in business. The difference is that the Jews use corruption much more effectively than the Mafia ever did. A corrupt politician taking money from the Mafia always had to worry about being exposed by the media. Italians didn't control the media. A politician in the pocket of the Organizzazione, on the other hand, has very little worry that he will ever see a headline in a Jewish newspaper accusing him of taking bribes from the Jews. Soviet Jewish gangsters are invited to the White House and to Democratic Party fundraising dinners where they can have their photographs taken with Bill Clinton. That just didn't happen with the Italian Mafia. This business of Jewish organized crime is really extremely important. It is something which will influence the life of every American in the near future, just as it influences the life of every Russian today. And I want to talk about it in much more detail in later broadcasts. For now, I just wanted to use the example of the Organizzazione as one more piece of evidence for the fact that Jews really are special. They really are different. They are not like us. And they are not just members of another ethnic group who need to become more fully assimilated, and then they will be just like us. In a couple of earlier broadcasts, I used the Jewish role in the white slave trade as an example of the unique nature of the Jews, and some listeners accused me of picking on the Jews. They believe that the Jewish role in the slave trade is an anomaly, not at all characteristic of the Jews as a whole, just as they believe that Jewish organized crime is an anomaly, just as they believe that Marxism was an anomaly, just as they believe that the Jewish control of Hollywood and Madison Avenue and the rest of America's mass media is only a coincidence, a fluke, with no special significance and certainly nothing to worry about. What they see as characteristic of the Jews is Jesus, Marx, Freud, and Einstein. Except that it's not really fashionable to talk about Marx and his Jewishness these days. The apologists for the Jews seem to believe, and would like to have us believe too, that the Jews are pretty much like us. That is, they aren't fundamentally alien. They're just a very bright, sensitive, creative, innovative, and well-meaning people. And we shouldn't hold white slavery, communism, or the Organizzazione against them. Instead, we should be thankful because they gave us Jesus, we're not supposed to mention Marx anymore, because they gave us Jesus, Freud, and Einstein. I think that I'll not get into religion today, so let's just talk briefly about Freud and Einstein. In popular lore, they are held up as the founder of the modern science of the mind and the founder of modern physics, respectively. The average member of the public has the vague notion that if it were not for Sigmund Freud, we would know nothing about psychology or psychiatry today, and that if it were not for Albert Einstein, we would have neither nuclear energy nor space travel. This notion is not based on fact, but rather on a myth propagated by the Jewish mass media simply because these two men were Jews. Sigmund Freud may have been a pretty clever Jew, but he also was a charlatan. He understood some things about the peculiarities of the human mind, as did other students of the mind in his day, but he, in a typically Jewish fashion, embellished, embroidered, waved his arms, and dramatized. He was a clever showman, a poser, as much as he was a scientist. Freud, with the help of his fellow Jews in his profession and in the media, created a pseudo-scientific illusion which caught the attention of many people. With a sober face, he advanced as science what really was not science. But it was flashy and catchy and clever, and many people believed it was science. Ultimately, Freud did more to hold back an understanding of the human psyche than he did to advance it. Einstein wasn't a charlatan. He was a very competent mathematical physicist, and he made some genuine contributions to our understanding of our world. But he did not invent nuclear energy or even lay the theoretical groundwork for the use of nuclear energy, nor is he the father of space travel or of modern physics. But he was a Jew, and because of that, his name has been drummed into the public's consciousness. Every couch potato and baseball fan recognizes the name Einstein, but none of them has ever heard of James Clerk Maxwell or Max Planck or Arnold Sommerfeld or Erwin Schrödinger or the other giants of modern physics. That's not because the work of these men was less important or less fundamental than that of Einstein. The reason is that they weren't Jews. Now, I'll state a fundamental truth, which is basic to an understanding of the nature of the Jews and of the Jewish role in our civilization. That truth is that the Jews as a whole are myth makers, illusion builders, or to put it less politely, they are tricksters. Their whole existence among us is based on deception and illusion and misdirection. Some of them are very clever. Some of them are creative, but they are quite alien in their nature. It is almost as if they had landed here from another planet. They disguise their alienness with a remarkable talent for deception. We are like a bunch of rubes at a circus, at a carnival, and they are the carnies. And where the rubes are concerned, the carnies stick together. Certainly, not every Jew is involved in slave dealing, or child prostitution, or welfare fraud, or is a member of the Organisatio, or, in the case of older Jews, belonged to the Communist Party. But whenever the call, "Hey, Rube," goes out, all of the carnies do their part to assure that the carnies win the fight, which is why you didn't hear about the Israeli consulate in Rio de Janeiro being a center for child prostitution until I told you about it today. The nice, non-communist, non-gangster Jews who control your media thought that it would be better for the rubes not to know about it. Thanks for being with me again today.